Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2, the podcast covering Division III sports through interviews with those involved in Division III. On today's episode, we have a great basketball player at Williams and also one of the best producers who's worked with some top-name artists like Rod Wave, Young Blue, and bro really just has a lot of insight about the game of basketball and music combined. So really fun episode, in my opinion.
Yeah, man, I think he was a great guest. Like, he was willing to answer any question that we gave him. I mean, he's just a really good guy at the end of the day. He, like I said in the episode, he dips his toes into different areas. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't just let himself be defined by basketball. Like, he tries to, he's a creative, as he says. Don't want to spoil too much, but he's definitely a good guy and a great guest.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil anything either, but one thing I liked about him is, usually I can kind of expect when we're developing questions what the viewer or what the guest is going to say. But with him, it was just like I'm soaking everything in because he had great advice about every single question I asked. We talk about a lot with him, basketball, playing in the NESCAC, his favorite matchups in the NESCAC, playing in the NCAA tournament, dealing with injuries, and then obviously producing one of the biggest songs that Rod Wave has ever produced. So definitely a great episode and appreciate you guys tuning in. And let's get into the conversation with Alex.
Sure.
All right, we're here with Alex. How you doing today, bro?
Doing well, man. Appreciate you having me.
Yes, sir, bro. We really excited for this episode, man. It's going to be a good one.
No cap. So I know you graduated a little early. What's life like for you right now?
Yeah, life's been good. So I graduated in January because I took a semester off during COVID. So since the season ended, I've really just been kind of getting back to working out. I just got back from a spring break trip with some of my teammates. Now I'm just home for a few weeks, and then I'm going back to school on Saturday.
Where'd y'all go for the spring break trip?
We went to Turks and Caicos. It was crazy.
Ooh.
Yeah. How was it? I know the weather is definitely different than it is in Massachusetts right now.
80s every day. I got my first sunburn that I had in like 10 years. We were out jet skiing, like on a boat. Like it was crazy. It was my first time going anywhere like that. So no, it was a good time.
I want to hear some stories after we're done recording. I know more than that.
Oh yeah, I got you.
One thing, you know, KJ and I were wondering, obviously, you know, we see on your Instagram that you're a producer, so, you know, or you have produced some music. So we're kind of just wondering, what are you listening to right now?
Yeah, I'm always listening to Rod Wave. That's my favorite artist. Like, to work with him was crazy because of that. But so I'm always listening to him. Listening to an artist named Marie Dahlstrom. She's one of my new favorites. I found her like last year in the spring. She's like R&B. She's from Europe. She's fire. And then kind of a little bit NBA YoungBoy, kind of that type of vibe. Rod Wave, NBA YoungBoy.
I respect it.
How do you get tapped into artists overseas like that? Like, you mentioned that one of those artists from Europe, so how do you get tapped into that?
Honestly, I was just listening to my Apple Music like station like randomly, and I heard one of her songs, and then I was like, yo, this is fire. And I listened to her whole album. It was literally no skips, and then ever since then I've been a fan.
That's tough. But let's get into it. So you committed to a NESCAC school. It's often compared to Ivy Leagues like Yale and Harvard. And it's also a PWI with just under 50% of students being white. And I read that you actually major in Africana studies. So talk to me about what led you to study that and what that coursework is actually like.
Yeah, so that major is funny. I was actually the first ever major of Africana Studies at Williams, because that major just got approved this year. So me graduating off cycle gave me the chance to be the first one, which is super dope. But yeah, I chose to study that just because I was going to do American Studies and then with an Africana concentration. And then once the major got approved, it just made sense for me to make that switch and finish up the coursework for that. But so the coursework I've done, like I took a senior seminar, Intro to Africana Studies. I ended up getting to do an independent study this year, which was super dope, which was all about Black film. So me and one of my teammates actually was in it with me. We would literally just watch Black films. So like movies like Creed, Black Panther, some Tyler Perry movies, Shaft. What else? We watched a bunch of movies though, like literally just movies that I had never seen before that I wanted to see. There were like classics in the Black community. And then we would write papers about them, discuss them with our professor. So that was a really dope experience. And for me as a creative, like that was awesome just to be able to break down and analyze like films like that and have it like be an actual class that I was taking.
That's fire.
Was that a major that you were always looking at coming out of high school, like those studies, like American Studies?
Yeah, not really. When I came in, I had no idea what I was going to study. That was one of the main things that like when I came to Williams, people would always say is like, you don't need to know what you're going to study. Like you can take your time figuring it out. So I was like I was taking like some econ classes when I first came in, taking music classes. And then, I kind of just settled on American Studies with the Africana concentration because I enjoyed like those type of classes. And then, like I said, once the major got approved, made that switch.
Word. So talking a little bit more about high school, I was talking with KJ. I was telling him about the New England Recruiting Report. And, you know, I saw that you were top 50 in Massachusetts. So you were a highly touted prospect coming out. And I just wanted to know, like, what made you pick Williams over other schools that were recruiting you?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with me picking Williams was really the team. So I visited a few different NESCACs. I visited Hamilton. I visited Amherst, not NESCAC, but also similar school, Babson. I visited. They recruited me too. And I think the biggest thing with Williams was honestly the team. Like I came to visit and just like immediately felt like welcomed by the team and felt like they had a really close knit group of guys. There was one other player on the team who's actually from my town, Matt Karpowicz, who's from Wellesley. And I knew Javon Jones a little bit, who was a year above me. And yeah, I just kind of connected with the team and felt like a good fit. I really love Coach App, and he was really wanted to get me and really made it clear that they value what I could bring to the table. So,
yeah, Williams has a great history of basketball. It started as a Division I school in the 1950s, moved to Division II, now it's Division III. And in the past two decades, Williams has made the Final Four or five times, won a national championship in 2003. So also some big name players like Duncan Robinson have also went to the school. So how does it feel for you knowing that you're a big part of the tradition and success of Williams?
Yeah, it feels good. That's one of the big things that Coach App really like makes us aware of is like the history that this came before us. So he has like, we've had either one or two alumni weekends where a bunch of alumni came back. We got to meet them, really just like have lunch with them or whatever, just talk. They came to practice and just get to know them like as people. So they're not just, you know, random alumni that you hear about. He really makes it a community of like the basketball community, the Williams basketball community, which has been awesome. But yeah, like, you know, every day in practice, you look up, you see the 2003 national championship banner, you see all the Final Fours. And so it really just like motivates you to want to like put your own banners up, which we were able to put up two Sweet 16s, which was amazing. One more NCAA tournament. So yeah, like it really just motivates you and like you want to be remembered as one of those like classes that had success at Williams.
What is the alumni network like? Like, is it easy to, you know, make connections with those, you know, with those alumni?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's like one of the biggest things about Williams is like the alumni are so willing to like talk to students. Like they want to give back to the current like generation of Williams. And I think having the basketball connection as well, like with the basketball alum, like is even more of a connection, and they definitely want to help you out.
Word. So you mentioned how, you know, Williams has a great, you know, history when it comes to basketball. And obviously the NESCAC is one of the best conferences in Division III. It's argued that, at least. So I just want to ask you, in the NESCAC, and it's also an interesting question because NESCACs only play each other once a year. So those matchups are, you know, you look forward to every one of those games because they matter. But what matchup did you always look forward to?
I think the classic answer that any Williams player would say is Amherst. Like, that's like, I think it's the oldest rivalry in any college or something.
Yeah, it is.
But that one is always a fun one. We actually play them twice because we play them in the Little Three, and then we also play them in conference. And pretty much every year, I think, of my career, that series has been 1-1 in the regular season. Like, for whatever reason, doesn't matter which team is good, which team is better. Like, those games are always close. There's definitely been at least two or three that were decided on either buzzer beaters or last-second shots or last-second defensive plays. So those games are always fun. The crowd always comes out for those games too, which makes it even more fun. Wesleyan, we've had some good battles with. I think yeah, the Little Three. So Wesleyan, Amherst, and Williams. Whenever those games come up, like, those are some of the best matchups.
I'm curious about how Williams is like preparing for those type of games. Every team has their own film study sessions or practice game. Do you guys take those matchups differently, or is it the same? And talk to me what the actual preparation is like.
Now, we treat them kind of the same as every other game. Like, we don't try to make them anything bigger than they are, but we also acknowledge the fact that, like, they are, you know, our rivals, and the fact that those games always bring out a different level of energy for everyone involved. Generally, like, our preparation, so we'll have, you know, our practice throughout the week, where we kind of, usually at the beginning of the week, we'll kind of break down our own, like, how we did the previous week in games, going over film and stuff of ourselves. And then as we get closer to the game, we'll go over their film and, like, their actions, their personnel. And then, yeah, kind of just coach will give us the game plan and all that stuff.
Yeah. Talking more about the competition in the NESCAC, obviously it's a stacked league. And 3 out of the 4 years that you've been there, you guys lost in the NESCAC tournament, but you end up making runs to the Sweet 16 or round of 32 and the NCAA playoffs. So talk to me about what that feeling in the locker room is like when, you know, you might lose in the NESCAC tournament, but you are looking forward to an at-large bid and hopefully get to play in postseason play.
Yeah, it's definitely tough. I mean, like you said, like two out of those 3 years, we went to the championship. And then every other year we went to the first year, my freshman year, we went to the first round. Lost to Amherst. Sophomore year, went to the championship, lost to Wesleyan in overtime. Junior year, we got upset and lost in the semifinals at home. And then senior year this year, we lost in the championship to Trinity. So, like, getting to that point, like, it's tough to lose at that point. Like, you know, it's nice to get that large bid, but it's like, I really wish we could have gotten one of those championships. That's one of the things I always look back on and wish we could have done. Because those games, especially those championship games, they've always been like such high level games. I think that Wesleyan overtime loss, I used to say that was the highest level basketball game I ever played in, and you know, it's definitely up there. Even after this year, we had a lot of really really like close games and high level games. But yeah, that Wesleyan game, yeah, that overtime, back and forth, like packed house, like in their gym, that was a special game. But yeah, like you said, though, we made it to the tournament the last 3 years. So that's a big accomplishment. And you kind of have to just refocus once, like we said, like we lost those games. So we kind of had to refocus and then realize, like, it's kind of a new season going into the NCAA tournament.
I had one question about one of the championships that you guys played, or more so for you to talk about it. But in the championship against Trinity, you had 18 points that game. You had a really good game. Mm-hmm. So talk about, you know, that level of play, because Trinity made it to the Final Four, so that's a high level team as well.
Yeah, that game, I was just kind of in a flow state. I was just in my rhythm that game. We had beaten them. We were the only team that beat them in the regular season. We beat them on a buzzer beater when we played them in conference play, and we knew that was going to be we knew they wanted to get us back for that. And I think I was just ready to go that game. Like, I was just excited to be, because I missed the whole previous season. So I was just excited to be back in the playoffs, be back in the championship game, and trying to get that championship that we couldn't get 2 years before. And yeah, I just kind of was in a rhythm where I wasn't even thinking about anything. I was just, anytime I had a look, I was putting it up and it was going in.
So you talked about how you guys won on a buzzer beater against Trinity, and you also won on a game winner. We'll talk a little bit later against a talented team in Oswego in the NCAA playoffs. So is there anything special that allowed Williams to be so comfortable in big game situations?
Yeah, I think this year especially, we were really – we just had kind of that fire in us this year to really, like, any obstacle in front of beginning of the season – before conference play, we had a bunch of close games. We had a game, I think we were down, I forget who it was, either Oneonta State or St. Lawrence, where we were down 10 or something with, like, you know, under 10 minutes to go, and we came back and won. I think we did that a few times. But really, it was just like everyone was always ready on our team this year. Like, even if they played 2 minutes or 20 minutes, like, or 40 minutes, like, everyone who came out and played, like, was ready to go. And that was what made us, like, so special, because we always had guys who were ready to go and who wanted to compete. That was kind of our identity this year, that our coach and our players all wanted to, like, embody, which was, like, competitiveness. And I think we really did that, like, throughout the season. And that's why, like, in those games, like the Oswego State game, the Trinity game, when it got down and was close at the end of the games, like, we were ready to go. We weren't stressed, and we weren't, like, overthinking anything. We were just going to continue to play our game and just keep competing on defense, and then know that the offense was going to come.
You talked a lot about how, you know, your coaches try to instill that type of mindset in you. And obviously, you know, players have that mindset too. But, you know, what does the practice and talks with the coach, and how does he implement that type of mindset into you guys?
I think the competitiveness kind of came from us this year. I think that was one of the things last year we kind of felt like we didn't have as much at certain times. And so that was kind of one of the things we really emphasized, like, this fall, like, in pickup, was just competing with each other. And then in practice every day, like, doesn't matter if we're doing a shooting drill, like, if we were doing, you know, sometimes we do, like, you know, the old guys versus the freshmen. I say old because we're all, like, fifth year, you know, we're a bunch of fifth year seniors, but we do the old guys versus the freshmen, and you know, we're talking trash to them. We're trying to win every drill. Like, I think that's where it starts from, is, like, every day in practice, you want to win everything. And I think that translates to the games.
You mentioned how you dealt with a significant injury your sophomore year, correct?
Yeah. So I got injured my sophomore year and missed my junior year.
Yeah. And I just want to talk to you about it because, you know, both, you know, KJ and I have dealt with injuries. You know, I tore my meniscus earlier this year, and I'm fully recovered now, but, you know, I know how that process is. So I just kind of wanted you to shed light about that.
Yeah. So it happened, it literally happened actually the first game back from COVID. So I had my freshman year, played that year, COVID hit. We don't have a season that whole year. I take some time off to keep the extra year. And then first game back in warmups, like, I go up and do a windmill, and I landed, and I was just like my knee was just killing me. I ended up playing that game through it, and I kind of forgot about it once the game started. But once the game ended, like, I really felt it. And so I missed, like, I think a month or two after that. And they said it was just like my cartilage and my knee was kind of just worn down. So I played that whole rest of that year on it, and it was pretty painful, but, like, I was able to play. So I was going to play. And then, it just kept getting worse though after that. And then by the time I was about to go to school for my junior year, it just hurt, like, too much for me to even play. So I ended up having to miss that whole year. I had surgery in December of 2022, and I thought I was going to be able to play that season, but then it just never got better. And then I actually decided I wasn't even going to play like this year. Like, I came to this decision, like, it's not getting better. Like, I'm going to just focus on like my career after basketball. And then, so I was kind of not even really focused on basketball over the summer. I was at an internship. I was doing some other creative freelance stuff. And then I was just continuing to rehab it just for myself, just so that I could, you know, live a healthy life. And then by the end of the summer, it started to feel a little bit better. So I was like, okay, I may as well, you know, try and get back on the court and see what happens. And then kind of just progress from there. I played one-on-one, played two-on-two, three-on-three, all the way up to five-on-five. And it hurt a little bit, but it felt good enough to play. And so I was like, well, if it feels good, like, I can't not play. Like, I love the game too much to not play. So,
yeah, no, that's a good story. I respect that you came back, because that definitely is, like, a scary feeling. Once you get surgery, you're like, I don't want to try the things that I used to do just because I don't want to re-injure it. But I respect your courage to come back and get after it. I
appreciate that.
But I want to circle back to postseason play. This year, you guys had a successful year. Like you said, you lost to number 4 ranked Trinity in the NESCAC tournament. But in the NCAA tournament, You played number 18, DeSales. You guys beat them by 24 points. And then you beat number 5, Oswego State, on a game winner. And you lost in the Sweet 16. So talk to me a little about that run and what their emotions were going through postseason play.
Yeah, for me, I was really excited to be back in the NCAA tournament after missing that year. And so that first game, we kind of just came out. In the first half, it was pretty close. And then we just flipped the switch in the second half and just started hitting everything. Just like I said, that competitive mindset, like we were just playing every play like it was our last play or whatever, and ended up winning that game by 20. And then the second round against Oswego, they were the host, so we were at their gym. They had a pretty good crowd. And it was just a back-and-forth game. Like, we kind of had the lead, and then they kind of came back and took it. And it was kind of anyone's game. And then Cole Prowitt-Smith, like, he just had the game of his season.
He had, like, 27?
Yeah, he had 27. Yeah. And it was pretty much all, like, you know, a lot of times we'll hit a lot of threes, but that game, it was really just, like, they were taking that away, and we were just taking what they gave us and just getting to the basket. And he was just getting to the basket at will. And on that last play, like, we ran the play for him. They kind of jammed it up, and then he just went and made a play and, like, had a crazy, you know, scoop shot, like, up and under with, like, 0.4 seconds left. After that, I was like, let's not celebrate, because, like, it's March Madness. Like, I know what happens when teams celebrate too early. And then, you know, the day before, someone had just hit a crazy, like, turnaround three with 0.5 seconds left. So I was like, let's not let that happen. They missed it, though. And then, you know, you got to celebrate after that. So that was crazy. That was a great feeling. And then you get an extra week when you win those first two games. So then we had another week of practice. And then we came into went down to Guilford in Greensboro, North Carolina. That was a fun trip. We got some alums down there that we got to see, or we got to have a practice at the Greensboro Swarm facility. One of our alums is Cole Teal. He's the GM there. So he let us in there. Got to see their facilities, which was awesome. And then, yeah, that game against Christopher Newport was definitely a tough one. It was one of those games where, like, we felt like we could have won it, but we just didn't have it that day. And then, you know, once you get to that part of the season, like, every team is so good that if you have that, like, that can't happen, you know?
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, that was a tough one. We just couldn't really get things going for us, especially in the second half. Ended up losing it.
Yeah. Christopher Newport is arguably, like, having the best decade of Division III. So does it feel different playing against that type of team? Like, they weren't as highly ranked as Oswego State or DeSales, but they beat you guys. So was there a different feeling in that game?
Nah, not really. I think, like I said, like, once you get to that point of the season, like, you know, every team is good. So we're not really going in looking, like, the thing for us, like, we stopped worrying about the rankings this year. I think that was one of the major things for us. Like, I think in the past, sometimes we would get caught up with them, but at least for me this year, I really didn't even look at the rankings like that. Like, they don't mean anything. Like, it's just a group of people who aren't playing, like, who are, you know, either coaches or analysts or whatever, like, that, you know, they don't know any more than we know. So it's like, why am I gonna listen to who they think is better? So yeah, I wasn't really worried about, you know, any of that stuff or any of their history. Like, obviously, you know, they're a great program because, like, they had that history and they just won the championship, so they got a lot of experience. But once the game starts, like, I'm not thinking about any of that.
One thing I'm wondering about, you know, this year's Williams group, it just sounded like you guys are connected. So what is that like, being able to spend that time in the locker room with all the guys and all that extra time?
Yeah. I mean, that's like the part of it that's like the hardest part when the season ends, you guys know, like, is just the fact that you don't get to hang out every day, like, playing basketball with some of your best friends. Like, yeah, it's great. Like, that's why we wanted to win those extra weeks so bad, you know, whether it's conference tournament or NCAA. Yeah. Because, like, we just really enjoyed, like, competing with each other. Like, we really just love that. And I'm excited to, like, get back to that, you know, this spring, just playing pickup with them. But yeah, that's the hardest part about losing, is the fact that you don't get to keep doing that every day.
So one thing that, you know, I wanted to ask you, you know, I've dealt with injuries, KJ dealt with injuries, and, you know, we've all dealt with adversities in our basketball career. And we wanted to ask you how you stayed grounded through all the adversity that you've gone through, like through the injuries, inconsistent playing time, COVID shutdown, whatever it may be. How did you stay grounded and how did you get moved through that?
Yeah, I think it definitely changed throughout my career. I think this year was definitely like the mentally toughest I've been. And honestly, like, it kind of just came from, you know, one of the movies I watched for my my independent study was Creed. Mm-hmm. And I think that movie, like, really inspired me. It kind of just showed me, like, every battle, like, every challenge that you face is, like, is really, like, with yourself, as opposed to, like, looking at it as, like, oh, why'd that happen to me? Like, why'd that injury happen to me? Or why is my coach, you know, not playing me as much as I want to play or whatever? Like, I stopped looking at it like that and instead looked at it as, like, all right, like, this is the situation. Like, how am I going to respond to it? Like, there was a period when I got sick and I had just started starting. I was playing some of my best basketball that I played, like, in my career. And then I got the flu and missed two games. And then after that, I wasn't sure what my role was going to be because, you know, other guys had played well and stuff. But I kind of just stopped thinking about it like that and was just like, all right, like, that's the adversity that I was dealt. So now how am I going to respond to it? And then, honestly, that's what kind of got me into, working out every day with my coach before practice. We started doing a shooting routine that we would do every day to warm up and, like, game speed shots and stuff. And so it's like, looking at it as, like, a opportunity to, like, overcome something as opposed to, like, feeling sorry for yourself or whatever. Because there's definitely times where I feel like I've had that mentality throughout my career, you know, because it's hard. It is hard, like, to overcome, especially the injuries and stuff like that. But I think this year I really had a new mindset. And I think that came from just, like, being so, like, grateful that I was able to play since I missed the whole season last year.
Yeah. You spent game. I appreciate that advice. That's really bars right there. But stay with us. We're about to take a quick break, and we're going to talk about you being one of the biggest producers. All right, we're back. We haven't talked about music so far, but people might not know you're one of the best producers. You're known as A-Stod with a money sign as the S. You were platinum and Billboard number one producer at one point, and one of your songs you produced was nominated for AMA, American Music Award. So first I want to start with when you started producing music.
Yeah, so I started producing, I think I was either in 9th or 10th grade, and I was just messing around with GarageBand. I'd actually gotten hurt then. I got hurt going into high school, so I had some extra time, and I would just mess around with GarageBand just because it was fun to do. And then I think in 10th grade, I started working with one of the artists in my school who wanted to start rapping. And then the rest of high school, I would just work with, you know, different local artists, like people from my school. And then I started to try and reach out to people via social media. That's kind of how I got started. And then I moved over from, you know, eventually upgraded from GarageBand to Logic and started kind of getting more equipment and stuff like that.
Yeah. Was there ever a point when you felt like, okay, I'm starting to get good at this?
Yeah, I think probably like my junior or senior year. And looking back on it now, like, sometimes I look back in some of those beats that I made back then, and I'm like, damn, I was still trash then. at the time, it was, you know, it's just, you're just constantly getting better. So it's like, you're better than you were a year ago. And it's the same with anything in life, you know? So like at that point in time, that's when I was like, oh, wow, like I can really maybe I can do something with this. And at that point in time, I hadn't like really produced for any big artists or anything like that. But I just started to like enjoy the stuff that I was making. So I think that's when I started to get more confident with it.
It's tough.
One thing I'm wondering about, what's the process like of, you know, building your way up through, you know, a hometown artist that's local to then Rod Wave, who's one of the, you know, biggest artists right now, and Young Blue too, who's a really good artist himself. So what's the process like of building up to that level and also getting in contact with them too?
Yeah, I think really it comes down to with that is just like continuing to improve like as a producer. So like I would make beats like pretty much every day. And then also just like networking, like that's like one of the biggest things, like, because you can be the best producer in the world, but if you don't know how to talk to people and don't know how to like get your beats in front of people, then like, you know, they're not going to go anywhere. So that's one of the things that I definitely got better at, like kind of end of high school, going into college, or just networking and like working with other producers is one of the big ways that like I was able to get my beats in front of different people that I couldn't otherwise have. And that's how like the Rod Wave song came about was I was working with a producer named Tego who has produced for Rod like countless times. He's probably got more than 20, 30 songs with him, some of his biggest hits. And so I was making melodies and I would send them to him and other producers. And then he ended up doing the drums on that one and sent it to Rod, and that's how that song came about. And like that's an example of like where, you know, if I had just been making beats myself, then that opportunity never would have came to me, because I would have just been, you know, limited to the contacts that I have. But because I was able to network and like talk to other producers and work with other producers, then I'm able to get my stuff to the people that they're working with also.
Yeah. I want to talk more about that song, OMDB, one of Rod Wave's best songs, in my opinion. Damn, I know you don't love me, baby. They try to take you away from me. Only over my dead body. You know, it was at one point number 87 on Hot 100 on the Billboard. It was nominated for AMA. It's on one of his best albums that went number one on Billboard, Hot 100. And I just want to hear more about, like, when you thought that song could be a hit, how you actually realized that Rod was going to use that song, and, like, how does it feel knowing that you produced one of his best songs?
Yeah, that was, like I said before, like, Rod is my number one favorite artist. So, like, that was one of the goals that I had written down, like, in my phone. Like, I want to get a song with Rod Wave by the end of 2020. Like, I wrote that in my goals. And that song happened, like, January of 2021. So it was, like, a month late. But I was, like, I think the fact that I wrote it down, like, is part of what made it happen. But, and it's crazy because I didn't even realize, like, I didn't know he was using that beat at all. Like I said, Tego sent it to him. And then I heard it for the first time in a snippet, like, he posted on Instagram. And I was like, oh, that's my beat. So that was crazy because, like, you know, I was just out of nowhere. And I posted the snippet just being like, wow, this song is fire. And then I was like, wait, like that's my melody. Because I hadn't even heard the full beat because Tego didn't send it back to me after he did the drums on it. So I hadn't even heard the drums on it. And then I hear Rod on it. And like, he had a line in there where he was like, the stage collapsed and it's the only time you see me fall. And I think when I heard that line, I was like, yo, this is going to be like, this song is crazy. But yeah, like that. And then eventually when the song came out, I didn't know until the song came out that he had done the Drake sample on the Drake Over My Dead Body replayed melody or replayed hook from that song. So that just like took it to another level because now it's like, you know, it's got that familiarity that people have with the original Drake song, which I wasn't even that familiar with, like when Rod dropped his. So that honestly put me on to that song from Drake. So that whole song was like a crazy experience. That's one of the craziest experiences in my life. Like being able to work with my favorite artists, like have a song that I actually like enjoy listening to myself just because I like the music as opposed to it being my own song. Like, yeah. And then like you said, like that whole album is like one of my favorite Rod Wave albums. Like I can listen to that pretty much with no skips. So that's pretty dope.
That's a fact. I'm kind of curious, as a producer, you don't got to tell me all the details, but how does like the pay distribution, like do you talk to Rod Wave, like I'm expecting this because you use my beat? Talk to me about that process.
Yeah, so I've never even talked to Rod Wave. That all was handled like through the label. So I talked with the label, Alamo Records, and kind of handle all that. And so generally on a song, as a producer, you'll get upfront payment and then you'll also get royalties. And there's a bunch of different types of royalties, which is super confusing, honestly. But the contract will kind of outline like the different splits, and it all comes down to like how many producers are on the song. So on that song, it was me and Tego, so we kind of split the producer portion. And then the fact that he sampled the Drake song, that also kind of made things more complicated because now the Drake everyone who worked on that Drake song also gets part of the royalties. So like you'll see them in the credits, like you'll see Drake, you'll see the producers of that song, other people who worked on that song. So that kind of they all get a portion of the royalties also. So it gets split up differently like that.
Yeah, that song kind of went crazy. So no matter how many people was split by, I know you was lit off that.
Right.
I was just wondering, what's the process of like, you know, connecting with other producers? Like how does that work?
Yeah, I think most of it was for me was through like Instagram. That was probably the main way. Like honestly, just reaching out to people, like listening to different. Like if I heard a song that I liked, I would go look up like, oh, who produced this, and then you know, potentially reach out to them and just be like, hey, like, you know, however it is, like maybe I like this song, like I'd love to work with or whatever. Or people would come to me the same way because they heard, you know, the Young Blue songs or the Raw Wave song and just be like, hey, like, I want to work. Like, I like your sound. And then after that, usually the process between like working with producers is one producer will send the melodies or send multiple melodies. And then the other producer will add the drums to it or add on whatever else they want to add. And then, you know, send it back and forth or send it to different artists.
Word. So Ruda actually sent me your Instagram profile. And when I was looking through it, I was like, oh, this is cool. He's a Division III athlete, produced for Wild Wave. That's cool. And then I looked through your highlights and I was like, whoa, this dude's actually a cut too. Like, he's really tough at basketball. So how do you think that Division III allows you to play at like a high competitive level while still venturing out to other fields and realizing that basketball or life is bigger than just basketball?
Yeah, I think if I had went to like a D1 school, like I had, you know, dreamed of as a kid, like, I don't think that the song Raw Wave would happen or like other creative things I've been working on would be able to happen because like playing D3, like, it definitely gives you the opportunity to have other interests and like be able to pursue those other interests. Just cause you have more time, like basketball it's still almost a full-time job at the D3 level. And like, you know, it's still obviously a crazy amount of work, but at the same time, you do have more time and more freedom. You're not traveling on planes every day. Like you might be at a D1 level at the D1 level. So like that definitely, and also my coach app, like he really encourages guys on the team to like pursue their other passions. And like in the summertime, especially like really pursue like internships and different opportunities that you're interested in and like reaching out to alumni and stuff like that. So he really was like, you know, really like he really supported things like that for me and other people on the team who did creative things. And I think that like goes a long way, knowing you have that like support from your coach to be more than just a basketball player. I think like everyone on our team like appreciates that. But yeah, I think playing D3 definitely gave me like the opportunity to where I could have the chance to like explore those other passions.
So you've talked a lot about, you know, throughout this episode, just about how, you know, creative, how you've dipped your toes in different things and just haven't allowed yourself to just stay in one, you know, bubble, just trying out different things. And now you're out of school, you know, you graduated early this year in January. And KJ and I are just wondering and excited to hear, you know, what's next for Alex Stoddard.
Yeah. So I think I'll answer it in two parts. So creatively, the big project I'm kind of working on right now is a documentary about our basketball season from last year. So I'm directing that, co-directing that and co-producing that with some other students from Williams and also one of my former teammates, Spencer Spivey. He's also producing it and he's going to score it. He's actually in film school right now at NYU doing film music. So that project is coming along. It's definitely showed me how difficult it is to make a movie, but it's coming along like right now, kind of in the post-production process. So I'm editing it right now and stuff. And then basketball wise, you know, like I said, I was injured all last year, so I actually have an extra year of eligibility. So I'm actually in the transfer portal right now. I'm hoping to find a new situation for next year for a grad year. So my goal is to see if I can go to a D1 or a D2 school. And kind of just, you know, chase the hoop dreams for one more year. So we'll see how things go with that. Kind of see where I end up. But yeah, like I said, you know, I'm excited to have both of those things going right now, the creative side and then also like just finishing out my basketball career, like kind of like this full circle, like, you know, final grad year.
Yes, sir. I respect that. Before we get into rapid fire and starting five, I just want a little more insight. You don't got to go crazy on the details, but when can we expect that documentary and what is it going to like show, like you guys in classes and stuff as well, or just like basketball games, practice, stuff like that?
So release day, I don't have one for you yet. You know, stay tuned for that. But yeah, in terms of like the premise of the documentary, it's kind of like looking at, you know, what it is to be a D3 basketball player and trying to give like a real account of what it means to play basketball at Williams. So like the, like we mentioned, like Williams is a really, really tough school academically. So dealing with that, dealing with the pressures of basketball, like the expectations of, you know, I think we came into that year ranked number 3 in the country. So dealing with those expectations and then obviously falling short and losing in the semifinals in the second round of the NCAAs. And then also just the basketball aspect of it. So, you know, kind of off the court and on the court, we did a bunch of interviews with guys. We interviewed our coach. We had our coach mic'd up for games. So I'm excited to, you know, to keep working on that and get that out.
I love that. I'm super excited for that.
And I kind of want another sneak peek. What are you looking for right now in terms of schools? Like, do you have any like academic requirements or like, you know, team? Like, are you just taking what you get?
Honestly, like, I really want to see how good I can get at basketball. That's like my goal for this next year is like, I really want to see if I can just, you know, lock in and reach my potential and play at the highest level I can. So honestly, you know, obviously I hope to go to a good school academically, but also like right now, like the focus is really the basketball for me. Like, I really want to see if I can play at the highest level I can. So that's why I'm going back to school on Saturday just to keep working out with my team. Stay in the weight room and just have access to like those resources and those facilities at Williams, and just have, you know, guys like that I can work out with every day. Yeah. So that's what I'm really excited for, is just to keep getting better and like see how good I can get.
Sky's the limit, bro. Keep grinding. But we're gonna end this episode with a little rapid fire and starting five edition. So whenever you're ready for rapid fire, let us know.
Let's do it.
All right. What's the word, Ruda?
All right, so I just made one on the fly. I was thinking about this while you were talking earlier. What is your favorite producer tag?
Ooh, producer tag?
It's a good one, bro.
I got to go. It's rapid fire. I'm supposed to answer, like, right away?
Nah,
you can take – don't take OD long, but you can take a little bit.
Man. I think Metro Boomin's got great tags. Man, that's a tough one though. I think Pierre Bourne, maybe. I don't know though. That, honestly, the Maybach music tag, that's not really a producer tag, but that's probably the hardest tag out.
Is
the
Maybach. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So that's my answer.
Okay. Next one. Favorite album that, you know, you think is underrated that people might not know about?
Favorite album. I'm gonna say Marie Dahlstrom, that artist I was talking about earlier. Her album, Like Sand. I think the album is no skips.
I'm definitely tuning into some of her music because you're speaking highly of her, and yeah. I respect your music taste, so I'm tapping in.
Yeah, check her out.
Your favorite text from Africana Studies?
Favorite text? Making me get back into the academic bag. favorite text?
Or we could do favorite thing you learned.
Favorite thing I learned? So I took a class about like blackness and social media. That was a pretty cool class. I guess one of the texts from that class was like we would look at Twitter. That was kind of like one of the sources we would look at. So I think that was pretty cool. So I'll say that. Yeah.
You don't have to have an answer, but was there anything like big takeaways you took from that? Because that sounds pretty interesting.
I think like using or seeing how social media like impacts culture. Actually, no. Let me go back and change my answer. A book called Asada, about Asada Shakur. That was one of my favorite. I read that one in 2019, so I really had to dig for that. That was my freshman fall.
Word.
Asada Shakur. I'm writing it down.
Yeah.
That was your last one?
Nah. One. We got one more.
I bet.
Top three producers of all time.
Top three producers of all time. I'm not going to say top three, but I'm going to say like my favorite.
All right, fair enough.
I'm going to go Kanye West. I think he's one of my, you know, as controversial as he is, like he's one of my influence, like major influences of why I started producing. Like I really loved his like sample chops and all that. That's kind of part of the reason I like started producing.
No judgments, by the way, with Kanye West. I'm not judging you, bro.
I'm gonna say this is someone that people don't really know about. One of my boys, actually, from out here that I work with a lot. His name is D Keys. He's the best piano player I've ever seen. He's the best like instrumentalist, and he's a fire producer. We've worked together a lot. He's worked with Rod. He did he did the song HD4 on the new album.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to continue to like just blow up. So he's number two. And number three, this is such a hard question. I'm going to go with another one of like my influences and like inspirations. And I'm going to say a producer named Drum Dummy. He did a lot of Rod Wave songs, a lot of Young Boy songs, kind of that pain style of music, of hip hop. So I think those are three of my favorites. I'm not going to say, you know, top three, I'm not going to rank them, but those are three of my favorites.
Right. I like it. So we're going to jump to starting five edition. So if you were a coach assembling a starting five, who would your lineup be? And this edition is going to be music artists that play basketball.
Okay. G Herbo. I've seen him. He can hoop.
Where are you putting him now?
Huh?
You at the one?
Oh, we got to go with position by position. Okay. I'll put Chris Brown at the one. I've seen that he can really handle the ball. He's going to celebrity game. So we'll put him at the one. Are we doing musicians? All musicians?
Anything. Whoever.
Okay. I'm gonna put Lil Durk at the two. He's got a nice little jump shot. I'm gonna put G Herbo at the three. Who else are some hoopers that can rap? Or some rappers that can hoop?
Let me adjust.
Let me move everyone up a position. I'll put Dame Lillard at the one, just because he's, you know, he's
okay. That's fair.
He's a rapper too.
Might as well add Lonzo in there too.
Right. I might. Yeah, Lonzo's my two now. So move everyone. Actually, no. Lonzo probably had to play the five on that roster. So we'll put Lonzo at the five, undersized lineup. But Lonzo, I used to listen to his music a lot. Actually, like
he's good. He's
my
good.
Senior year high school, his first album, Born to Ball. Like that's actually an underrated album.
I didn't listen to that whole thing, but he actually does got some talent though.
Yeah, he can freestyle too.
There's one big that I know of that rapped before. Yo, Shaq, bro. Shaq got a rap album. You got to pick him at the five.
Heard you.
What's up, Shaq? In for G Herbo.
Okay.
Heard you. That's valid. Well, that's gonna do it for another episode. Not even D2. This has been a great conversation. We appreciate you joining. Looking forward to talking to you more.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me. This was fun.
Yes, sir. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2. If you haven't already, make sure to go follow all the socials at Not Even D2. You can catch every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm your host, KJ Allison, and I'll see you next episode.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.